The Federal Reserve cut interest rates yesterday for the first time this year and said the move is an effort to prop up the U.S. job market. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the latest unemployment data and the economic landscape for small businesses are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Economics, Michael Jones. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
And Director of Northern Kentucky University's Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, Zach Strobel. Thanks for being here, Zach.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Michael, walk us through the federal jobs report released September 5th. What did it say about unemployment and the number of jobs that were added in August?
It was really a sobering report on the state of the U.S. economy. We had been thinking that the economy was adding about 150,000 jobs a month. So over that previous year period, about 1.8 million jobs were added. But what the revision suggested was that that number was actually about half of that. There was only about 900,000 jobs that were added. And where that's a problem for the economy is that we need to be adding about 150,000 jobs a month in order to maintain full employment, to make sure the working age population has jobs and to keep up with demographic growth. So now that revision cut that to about 70 to 75,000 jobs a month. Now, there's even a little more worse news in that the most recent 3 months, the summer period, we were only adding jobs at 30,000 a month on average. And so you made that announcement that the Fed had cut interest rates, and part of that was due to this pretty disappointing jobs report.
What are some of the reasons behind those numbers, Michael?
Well, one of the reasons for the revisions is that it takes some time for some of the data to come in. And so when the initial estimates come out, we don't have all of the numbers back from businesses, for example, that have failed. It takes some time to get that information in. And so we knew there were going to be revisions. I think everyone was a bit surprised at how large those revisions were. And so it really affects the policy decisions that are moving forward. We've seen it in terms of interest rates. But there's some other flashing warning signs about the U.S. economy that we're concerned about. We're seeing increases in debt defaults. We're seeing home prices start to decline. And so the economy is no longer on really a solid foundation. We're seeing a lot of cracks start to show.
Zach, how are broader economic factors, and I'm thinking about things like tariffs and inflation, these federal cuts that are happening in all these agencies, how are those affecting small businesses? I hear a lot of news reports that really focus on uncertainty.
Correct. So it very much depends on the industry that you're in. So if you are dealing with supplies and they have been affected by tariffs, like obviously the small business has no other choice but to raise prices. So that affects the broader economy as well. And there's it really kind of boils down to like which industry you're focused on and looking at each one of those independently, because some are doing very well, some have taken a hit.
Mm-hmm. Does that uncertainty, kind of not knowing what inflation's going to do, not knowing exactly the impact of the tariffs from, you know, week to week or month to month, what does that mean for kind of the thought process for a business owner? It's got to make it tricky to decide, do I hire more people? Do I get rid of people? What's the thought process there?
Correct. There is a level of ambiguity with that. And that is something entrepreneurs do deal with a lot, is they can't predict because they don't have years of data like a large corporation does have. So when you're running a small business or a startup, you have to get your crystal ball out and try to predict the future. So, but when there's things outside your control, that makes it even more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Michael, that September jobs report that we were just talking about also showed an increase in the percentage of people who have been out of work for more than 6 months. Talk to us about that number and why it's important to consider.
It's becoming very difficult for a lot of individuals, particularly those at the entry level, to find a job. And so there's frustration that mounts. We're seeing this even with some of our students, in that they came into the university with the expectation they'd have a job waiting for them, particularly in fields where it was a technical field that required a lot of programming skills. And now they're finding that they can't find that job, even over a 26-week period. So what it means for those students is they're having to continue to live at home. They can continue to get health insurance from their parents, but there's frustration that's setting in. And what that means, as Zach was talking about with the consumer and that spending, it's really affecting the ability for those students to find a way to use their skills.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about unemployment and long-term unemployment in the U.S. and whether maybe more people might be starting businesses as a result. Are you or a family member looking for work? What's your experience with the job market? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Michael, I might not be remembering this correctly, but I thought the long-term unemployment, it was something like 26% or something in the jobs report. Do you remember what that figure was? It was a really, like, the highest number in years.
I don't remember the exact figure. What's also concerning is that it hasn't gone down. And we're continuing to see those individuals not be able to find a job. And I think there are jobs available. We can talk a little bit about that. There's been a shift in where those job growth is coming from. We're seeing in health services. There's still a growing demand for nursing. We're seeing in education. We know right here in Cincinnati, there's plenty of job opportunities available in our public schools for aides, for students, for example. And so we need to find a way to transition those individuals that weren't able to find a job, but now they have to actually go back to school. Nursing requires a four-year degree. And so there's a structural unemployment that we see that it's going to take some time to see the economy shift to find jobs for those individuals.
Yeah. Zach, I've seen studies that found that one-third of the people who've been out of work for 6 months or more, these long-term unemployed people, are people with college degrees. Talk a little bit about what you're hearing from students, what the labor market looks like for college students and recent college graduates.
Yeah, as Michael hit on, the jobs are shifting. And so I've had students who have majored in innovation entrepreneurship, which is what I teach, go into teaching, go into construction, go into the trades. Some of them are looking forward, which is good, and we try to help them prepare for that. But you are seeing the jobs shift. And so but there are plenty of opportunities out there still. So I do want to be optimistic as well, that you just have to work a little harder to figure out what those opportunities are. And yeah, you might need some more training than what you have in your four-year degree, but I do want to give people some optimism as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's some hope out there. Zach, do you have a sense for what impact artificial intelligence could be having on the job market for people who are just entering it, for these recent college grads?
There's a big emphasis on, if you are in a traditional office type job, we'll just say, which I know those can be remote now as well, but you do need to understand it and be able to use it as a tool. And so where I am seeing is more of an impact on, you have to be able to harness that power as opposed to being afraid of it. Mm-hmm. And so there is a big shift onto like what tech tools are out there and available. And there's a lot of people who are mastering it. So if you can focus on that, that's something that you can actually use to your advantage.
Yeah. Michael, I don't know how granular that jobs report gets, but do you have a sense for how many of these long-term unemployed people who have college degrees aren't new college graduates, but are people who've been in the job market for years in fields like journalism, for example, that are seeing lots of cuts, or these federal agencies that are cutting lots of jobs? I mean, what's going on there?
Yeah, fortunately, the jobs report does break it down by industry. And so we can see that, somewhat surprisingly, there was a decline in manufacturing jobs even over that last year. So despite the increase in tariffs in order to promote manufacturing taking place in the United States, we actually saw a decline in manufacturing jobs. We also saw a decline in federal government jobs. That wasn't a surprise. I think it was nearly 100,000 jobs were lost at the federal government level. And in fact, that's going to continue because, you know, as more of those come off of administrative leave or being suspended, we're going to continue to see those numbers decline. The places, again, where we have seen some pickup is construction. Even in Ohio, that was the industry that saw some of the most percentage growth year over year is in the construction industry. So if you look here in Ohio, we're starting to see that shift from the federal government. It's not providing that stable source of employment that it did for years and years. And so we're shifting to, you know, things like construction.
And I would imagine those federal jobs, some of those industries, those are jobs where people have been working there for a while.
That's right. That's right. And so that is partly contributing to that long-term unemployment.
Yeah. Zach, do you get the sense that some of people who are considered long-term unemployed are starting businesses to make a living? Like, if nobody's going to hire me, I got to find something to do.
Yes. I was approached over the summer by someone who was part of the federal cuts. He is now going into business for himself. Mm-hmm. And so he's got decades of experience. He's got a good network, good base, but he's actually in a good place to start a business. So the research shows that that's a very good time of life to start a business. And he said, hey, this is something I've always wanted to do, and I'm moving forward now.
Yeah, the universe kind of forced his hand a little bit, I guess.
Correct.
Yeah. Are there particular industries or fields where more businesses are starting up these days, Zach?
There are. It's interesting looking at those data sets. You do have a lot of people doing what we call side hustles. So, you know, if you do something like drive for Uber or some of those types of businesses, this may or may not show up in the business starts just based upon, you know, are they filing an LLC or getting an EIN or some factors like that. We've always had a broad, different types of industries that are starting. And yes, there's a lot of opportunities out there. But I get a whole gambit of different people coming to us. So it's kind of hard to say there's only these industries when especially in this region, we just have, there's a lot of different people starting a lot of different kinds of businesses.
Sure. What's the success rate for small business startups? I mean, I think, you know, we hear that a lot of them don't make it past the first year or the first 5 years. How tough is that? And how does that figure into people's, you know, equation and into whether to start a business?
So I've looked at those numbers over the years. They've changed. They've been kind of broken down by industry as well. At one point in time, I saw that retail and restaurant had the, you know, 50% failure rate after 5 years. I haven't looked at that stat in recent years, but it's hard to measure some of these because someone might start a business and then get hired somewhere else. You know, someone might sell their business. So I don't think we have great data on this currently, just the way it's measured. But I mean, and then when you get into these high tech, high growth startups where they're raising venture capital, you're looking at more of a 90% failure rate. So there's a huge difference between, you know, starting a service-based business where you're depending on that income for your salary versus you're going all in, you're raising venture capital, and you know there's a high probability of failure.
Yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
Can I make a comment just about the retail space and starting up a restaurant? Some of the recent numbers that have come out just in the last week, we've seen that the consumer spending is really being propped up by that top 20% of income. If you look at the bottom 80%, so those making less than about $170,000 a year, their wages have just kept up with inflation. So we've seen just massive increases in consumer spending over these last few years, but that's being driven by those at the top. And so if you're in an industry like a restaurant or retail where you need just a broad swath of consumers to come in, there's a little bit of concern that over this next year or two that's not going to be driven as much as it has been over these last couple of years. I don't want to be the negative pessimist, but yeah.
No, it's important to talk about those things. And I guess even when you're starting a business, no matter what kind it is, there's no guarantee you're going to get a paycheck out of that business. Your margin's going to be slim. If you're a restaurant, if you don't get any customers, that makes it hard to pay yourself. I mean, is that part of the calculation too, Zach?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, retail restaurants are very tough businesses to make good profit on. And just so people are aware, it's like if you own a privately owned business, your business, the owners are typically paid by the profits. So if the business isn't profitable, you're not bringing home money. And so it's usually you want to be in a good place where you're making enough money to substitute your income. But, you know, something like retail and restaurants, that's even more difficult because you have to kind of go all in. You can't have one foot in, one foot out. Some people can, you know, if they have a spouse making a good income or something like that. But those are very difficult businesses to make a profit on right away.
Yeah. Imagine it can strain a relationship too, depending on how that goes.
Correct.
So I want to get both of you thoughts on this, or either of you. If you're somebody at a crossroads, you've been looking for a job for months, you're trying to decide, okay, do I start a business? Do I go back to school? Do I learn a trade? Is there a safe path to take?
Safe
is a tough word, I guess.
Yes. Very much depends on what you want to go into. I don't think any job is ever truly safe. I mean, there's in our field, Michael, there's, you know, tenure that might help with
for
that.
Now.
But yeah. For now, yeah, it's, joking aside, there's industries that are very high in demand, which, you know, Michael can talk more on that. But as far as entrepreneurial opportunity, we're actually at a very good place for entrepreneurship. So there's more resources in this region than I've ever seen. And so it's really the past 10, 20 years, Cincinnati and our greater Cincinnati area with Northern Kentucky in it has really risen, and you're seeing a lot more opportunity for entrepreneurs in this region.
We've talked about a couple industries. You can think about healthcare, where if you need a four-year degree, it's going to take longer, and you might not be willing to take that risk. But there are jobs where after 12 weeks, personal care assistant, some of them can provide that for 12 weeks. They can even provide, some organizations locally will provide that funding for you and guaranteeing the job on the other side when you finish. So if you are in that long-term unemployment and you're looking for a stable way to make sure, pretty low risk, there's obviously, there's never zero risk. But for those industries or an apprenticeship, particularly in the trades, we talked about plumbing, we talked about electrician, they will pay you as you earn that credential. And so if you are in that situation, you need that cash right away, and you can't wait for 4 years to go back and transition to get that four-year degree, highly recommend looking into those apprenticeships or those fields where they'll pay for your training over that short window of time for healthcare.
Michael, we talked at the beginning of this conversation about how the Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate yesterday. First time they've done that since December. Talk to us a little bit about that rate cut and what it could mean for the labor market.
Yeah, the jobs report was a driving factor of why that cut was coming. The Fed has two mandates. It needs to control inflation, and it also needs to maintain full employment. And that's a difficult task, particularly right now, as you've looked at the most recent numbers, inflation actually spiked up in that report. And so the Fed has a tough job. And so they're trying to decide which is the worst one of those moving forward. And so one of the reasons why we cut interest rates, the Fed does that in order to spur consumer spending, which will create these types of jobs, is that a lot of times consumer spending comes from borrowing. If I'm borrowing to buy a car in order to get to work, I'm borrowing in order just even to make regular expenses to going out to eat. So as the cost of that borrowing goes down, it's actually going to spur more economic activity, again, coming from the consumer, which is a key driver of our economy. But I don't envy the Fed's task moving forward, because they've got to maintain that employment while not bringing up inflation.
We'll talk a little bit more about that balance the Fed seems to be trying to achieve. That seems kind of tricky.
Yeah, and it's not just those two things that are at play. We see a lot of policy decisions, particularly with tariffs. That's something that if you listen to the chair, the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell talk about this, I mean, it is starting now to show up in prices. And that is something he does not have control over. And so as tariffs start to really take a bite on inflation, and we've seen that spike here recently, he needs to make sure that he is continuing to make sure that the labor market continues to maintain its employment while at the same time not seeing inflation take off. And that's the concern, as you start to reduce interest rates, trying to balance those two things is very difficult.
Yeah. Again, we're talking about the labor market and the startup scene for small businesses. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Zach, what impact could that rate cut by the Fed have on businesses, small businesses? What could it mean for them?
So a small business that's doing well, it helps them expand. So if they're able to get a small business loan and they want to do that, they could grow their operation. So getting equipment, growing their facilities, hiring more people, those are all, kind of effects of those cuts.
Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Michael?
Yeah. Typically when you're an entrepreneur, the reason you're starting is you don't have that big cash reserve. And so you're looking for someone to lend you those funds, whether it's a venture capital. So obviously as the cost of capital comes down with the interest rates, it's easier to acquire funds to start that business. So that's, again, a reason why the Fed's doing it, whether it's on the consumer side, but also it makes it easier to create new jobs.
Yeah. Michael, let's circle back to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the reports it releases. You referenced earlier that the BLS issued that revision that said hiring, I think it was for the 12 months that ended in March, was overstated by more than 900,000 jobs. What do you make of that? What does that say to you about the work of the BLS and those kinds of reports?
This is an ongoing problem that the federal government has known about for a while. A lot of the source of our statistics comes from survey responses. And if you look over the last few years, that survey response has gone from somewhere above 90% to down to 70 to 75% in some of these data sets. And it might not seem like a lot. And so if you're thinking, you still get a response rate of 3/4 of the people, but that creates a lot of uncertainty in those estimates. And so the reason these revisions exist is that there's a trade-off of timeliness and accuracy. And if you want the data today to make informed decisions, and we do, you're not going to have the full picture, because a lot of that information doesn't come until thinking about filing your taxes, the individuals, they haven't even filed everything for 2024, right? It's coming up, the extension is due. But think about it, the U.S. government right now doesn't have the full picture of 2024. And so this is an ongoing problem. It wasn't for, I think, malicious reasons or sort of political reasons, but it does, I think, raise some questions about does the Bureau, do these other statistical agencies, do they need to update some of their methods in order to better capture those uncertainties?
Mm-hmm. So you think it's a methodological or structural kind of thing, not political or something like that?
No, I don't think it's a political. I don't think it's somebody who's manipulating the data. But I do think there needs to be a closer look at, can we do a better job of getting a better survey response or adjusting our statistics to account for that uncertainty?
Yeah. Zach, how important are these reports to get a sense for the economy, just where it's been, where it is, where it's going?
Yeah, it was interesting because we were, prior to this, we were looking at how many business starts there are, trying to see if there's any correlation between that and the job market. What's very interesting was there was a boom in business starts during mm-hmm. COVID. And so I started looking deeper into this. I noticed it anecdotally, and a lot of it was people were kind of reevaluating how they want to spend their time, what they want to do. I think COVID gave people time to reflect as well, which was also interesting. And so I think, for someone who has that entrepreneurial spirit, now is just as good of a time to move forward. There's no real indicators right now in the data that we're seeing that says like, hey, don't start a business right now. And so there's always risk involved. And so I do want to encourage people, like, don't hold off on it when you see these kind of reports.
Yeah, Michael?
There's also risk in staying with your existing large employer. We've seen the federal government has laid individuals off. And even locally, you look at some of our large Fortune 500 companies. We just saw in the last couple months, Procter & Gamble has announced 7,000 jobs over the next 2 years. And you probably took that job a while ago thinking this is stable, and now there's some risk there. So mm-hmm. We talk about entrepreneurs as risky, but at least you're in control somewhat mm-hmm. of your future.
Yes.
Yeah. And just in just about 30 seconds or so, Michael, that's not much time, but are you still looking at these BLS reports as important? Do you still think they're valuable?
Absolutely. They're very informative. We need timely responses. If you look at what the Fed is doing, they need to know right now what the economy is doing. We just need to recognize that there is going to be some uncertainty in being prudent in how we think about and interpret those numbers moving forward.
Fair enough. Well, I have been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Economics, Michael Jones, and Director of Northern Kentucky University's Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, Zach Strobel. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Billy.
Are you thinking ahead to November's election? Join us in our new building for a Cincinnati Edition politics show at 8 p.m. on September 24th. It's free, but you need to reserve a spot. Go to wvxu.org to reserve your place today. You won't want to miss it. Up next, we're going to talk about Joe Burrow's turf toe injury, what it will take to recover, and what it could mean for the Bengals this season. We're going to hear from a local surgeon, and we will hear from a sports expert. You won't want to miss it. Stay tuned. I know Joe's toe is all the talk right now. This is Cincinnati Edition.